The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2013 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2013. If you have purchased this audio CD, you are free to make multiple copies of it for your own or your school's use. You may not sell copies of this audio or post it on the internet. To find out more about ACCS, or to order additional conference talks, visit our website at accsedu.org. Look for the Conferences tab. Thank you for your support of ACCS.
Well, good morning, everyone. Come on in and find a seat. You are in the workshop that's called Sins of the Classroom. So we get to talk about sin for the next hour. Yeah, and let's pray and then we'll get started. Father in heaven, we thank you for time and the fact that you've given us some this morning to sit and think about the project that you've called us to teach our students well. And Father, we have a holy fear of this project, and at the same time we love it and we're called to it and drawn toward it. And we pray that you'd equip us to deal with people faithfully. Pray that we would follow hard after you and that you'd grant us success in this. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, so just by way of introduction, what we're going to do is this morning I'm going to talk to you about some ground rules for how we attack particular situations that we deal with regularly in the classroom and in life, quite frankly. And then I'm going to get to some particulars after that. And I think we're going to talk about three specific sins this morning, and then we're scheduled to talk about two or three more this afternoon, something like that. So I'll bring us to a point and then pick up this afternoon for anybody who wants to come by. But as far as ground rules, I just want to go over a couple things so you know the world that we're operating in. The first thing is we shouldn't be shocked at all that we have to deal with sin, because all of our students are sinners, all of their teachers are sinners, all of their administrators, all their parents, all the board members. I mean, we're all fallen. We're broken as a people. And one of our biggest problems is that. And so, certainly math's important and science is important and reading is important and music is important. And yet when we get people together in a school or in a classroom and we have relationships that are taking place, the thing that gets in the way is not ignorance, it's sin. And so that's one of the things that we need to be aware of as teachers. When God calls you to become a teacher or an administrator and he says, all right, here's your class, here are your 17 students for this year, there are a lot of different facets of things you're going to need to keep track of, but one of the most important things is, how do you love that class the way that God loves you? How do you imitate Jesus Christ in the way that you deal with your students or deal with the kids in your entire school if you're an administrator? And so the first ground rule that we'll talk about is discipline as imitation, okay? And usually, it's kind of a fun order of things. I'm going to talk about specific sins today and then general classroom discipline. Covenant discipline will be tomorrow. Usually the order is reversed, and I talk about the principles, and then we go to the specifics. It's not going to be that way now. We're going to talk about specifics. I'm just going to wave at the principle. And the principle that I'm operating from is that if you're going to be a good teacher, you will only be a good teacher to the extent that you're imitating Christ faithfully. And so some of the principles that we see in our Heavenly Father exhibiting is when he raises his covenant people, he teaches them, he trains them, and he blesses and curses. Okay, and again, I'll unpack that more tomorrow, but those are the three categories that I work through as a teacher. Whether it's beginning of the school year and I want to start things off well, I'm thinking, teach the law. What are the terms of the covenant? so that everybody knows what my expectations are for them. The second thing I'm thinking through is, how do I train my students so that I'm preparing them to face temptation? I'm preparing them to obey regardless of the situation they find themselves in. And then the third thing is, how do I deal with life where you have kids that are obeying and also kids that are disobeying? Okay, so again, those are the three categories that I'll work through. And it's all, it's not just, well, here's the three-step program. It's really more of a, it's a life of knowing your Father, loving your Father, and imitating your Father, right? Copying your Heavenly Father as you discipline your own kids at home and also in the classroom. So that's ground rule number one. The second thing, and in our day and age, it's important for us to keep in mind, is Proverbs 13:24. And it says, "He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly," or disciplines him diligently. And so for us as teachers or administrators, first we have to get it straight. And the simple lesson is this, and it's that a lack of discipline equals hatred. Right? If you have children, God's blessed you with kids at home. God says, if you want to hate them, the way to do it is refrain from disciplining them. Right? And he mentions specifically the rod. Don't spank them. You want to hate your kids? Don't spank them. And for us, you know, I'm already weird enough. I'm from northern Idaho. We spank kids at my school. Right? That shocks people nowadays. And I'm just kind of used to it. I'm used to this little world where I have two paddles hanging up in my office, just like the good old days, you know, if that's the way you see it. And I think through, okay, an office visit, I think through, is this going to be a conversation? Is it going to be one spank, two spanks, or three spanks? And then we're going to make things right when we're done. Just that little, you know, that took me, what, 15 seconds to say that. That undoes us as a people. And that indicates that we have some things that are upside down culturally for us. You know, if you have young kids with their first child and they're raising that child and they realize if we spank our son, they may take him from us. Right? That's a very real possibility depending on where you live in the United States. And it's crucial. Right? This is just kind of the basics. This is raising kids 101. God says, if you don't spank them, you hate them. And we're thinking, if we spank them, they may take our child from us. So that's why it's one of the ground rules also, is that as parents and as teachers, we need to realize that love equals godly discipline. And I'm not saying, you know, any sort of spanking for any kind of offense, just spank them all day long, and that's love. I mean, we realize that's not the case, right? But godly, self-controlled discipline in the context of the home or in the context of a school where parents have delegated that authority to an administrator in certain circumstances, as you imitate God in those things, that means love. And I think that we need to teach our students self-consciously to see it that way. You know, the reason that I'm hard on my class is not because I'm uptight or it's inconvenient to me when they're bad or they're a real pain in the neck when they come in from recess loud and it upsets my whatever it is, you know, my indigestion or who, you know, whatever problem I have. It's not that I'm uptight and therefore I'm trying to clamp down on them. It's that I love them and I want the best for my students, and that means I'm going to hold them accountable. And so, you know, just very simple things with our kids as they've grown up. Our youngest is Boaz. We call him Bo. And Bo is six. He'll be in first grade in a couple months. And so it's the sort of thing where after a spanking, you know, I'll look at Bo and say, "Bo, why does Papa spank you so much?" And he'll look at me and say, "Because you love me." I'll say, "That's exactly right." Right? And that's part of our catechism. Why? Because I know in our culture, we see black as white and white as black. right? We have it all inverted. And so I want to teach my son, see this accurately, understand what's going on here. And it's a reminder for me, and it's a reminder for him. And I mean, it's the same sort of thing in the classroom. So the first ground rule is discipline is seen as imitation. Second thing is a lack of discipline is an act of hatred. And the third ground rule is Proverbs 21:11. And it says, when the scoffer is punished, the naive becomes wise. Okay, when the scoffer is punished, the naive becomes wise. And so the thing that I want to draw out of that passage is just this simple lesson. Anytime you have a group of students together, or let's pretend this is our classroom, right? Anytime you have a group of people together, you're going to find three general categories of people in that group, right? And Solomon knew this. And on a basketball team, I'm a coach. If I get 12 guys on my varsity basketball team, I'm thinking through basically three different categories. Third grade teacher, if I have 18 kids in my class, I'm thinking through three different categories. As an administrator, I've got teachers on staff. I'm basically thinking through three different categories, right? And the categories are these. You're going to have students in your class that are wise. Day one, they come in, they're poised, they've got their pencil, they're sitting up straight and tall, their eyes are on you, and they're just like, take us, Mr. Whitling. What do you want us to do? Right? They're ready. And this was a shock to me. You know, it really, quite frankly, was a shock because I came the year before I taught third grade at Logos School. I was in California. I was in the Fresno-Clovis area, so kind of central California, in teaching remedial math classes to delinquent teenagers who were all not wise. I had no wise students in my classes. They're actually designed that way. They had formulated the classes just for me. And they took all of the failing students, 7th through 12th grade, took all of the Fs out of their basic math classes, pulled them out, created new classes of all F students, right? So I know what it's like to not have any wise students. That was the year before I came to Logos to teach 3rd grade. And I know what it's like to see third graders who are sitting up straight and tall with their pencils poised, and they're just like, we're ready. And I was shocked because I had no idea how to teach anything, right? I knew how to discipline. I didn't know how to teach. But anyway, in a group of kids, you're going to have wise students. They see you, and you might be 5'2". And they see their father's shadow behind you. And they honor and they respect you, right? Because they know mom and dad have talked to them before the first day of school. When your teacher asks you to do something, you say, yes, ma'am. You do it as hard as you can. You treat her with more respect than you treat us at home. We want you to obey her, honor her, listen to her, focus on what she says, remember it, pay attention in class, work hard. She loves you. She's going to be hard on your class. You know, just all of this, and a wise student is just right there with you, and they get it. Okay. Second category of kids that you're going to have are naive kids, right? And so a naive student comes in, and they're not wise, but they're also not doing a bunch of awful things. They have big eyes, you know, and they're watching and learning, and they want to know what kind of person you are, and that really has, you know. If you're trying to figure out tricks and techniques, you know, what do I do? If a kid says this, how should I answer? Or if this situation takes place on a field trip, what's the magic thing to do at that point? You're really not going to find that. And that's not what classroom control or godly discipline is about. It's going to be different depending on your personality. But more than anything else, your students want to know what kind of person you are, right? What are you like? And then they're going to draw all sorts of connections to hypothetical situations for what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. A naive student comes in and they're just watching. And they could go either way. The wind blows and they blow with it. So you have wise students, you have naive students, and then you're going to have scoffers, at least to some extent, right? Now, again, when I moved from California to Idaho, my third grade scoffers were so lightweight, it was just silly. Right? I mean, they really didn't count for reals as scoffers. They were more just like the rougher, naive students, but there were no pirates like I was used to. But still, you know, even in your own family, right, with seven kids, I know I've got kids that are easier, kids that are in-betweeners, and kids that are pushing buttons all the time. You know, they're high-maintenance kids that require twice as much discipline, twice as many spanks, twice as many conversations for half the results. And, you know, and oftentimes those are the kids that have some of the strongest gifts. You know, it's the other side of the coin, right? You see this really tough personality, and he's just like, so, you know, so you're the principal. And, you know, there's like no natural just inclination to obey and be respectful in the kid. And you think, God, you know, when God sanctifies that, he's going to use it in a really powerful way for the kingdom of God when and if it's sanctified, right? I mean, you don't want to just let them run with that because it's trouble and it's hard work and it's a pain in the neck, right? But at the same time, you think, God, use this because this is going to be a strength. My greatest weakness that I see in my kids sometimes is what he's going to turn. He says, there's some real diamonds here that need to be sanctified and used for the kingdom. So your worst kids, don't give up hope. Oftentimes, they'll be your strongest leaders, right? Because they've got guts and they don't care. And in life, that's really healthy sometimes, to just not give a rip what anybody else thinks. And just kind of say, you know, I'm just doing this. I don't care what anybody else thinks about this stupid idea, you know. And you just go, you know, but he's five or he's six. And you're trying to get him to stand in line. And you're just like, or wear something to church on Sunday morning, right? Just wear the shirt. He doesn't want to wear the... So anyway, this third rule was when the scoffer is punished, the naive becomes wise. And so you're dealing in this public setting. It's not one-on-one. And I think there's a really healthy dynamic that's created because it's not one-on-one, because you're part of a team, because you're part of a group. And, you know, imagine your naive kids in the class. They need the scoffers to learn from. The scoffers need to be disciplined. But here's the scenario, you know, and you can fill in the blanks with the particulars. But, you know, it's the first day of school or sometime during the first week, and you have wise kids and naive kids and scoffers in your classroom. And a scoffer's going to, you know, you turn around and you're writing the math lesson on the board or whatever it is that you're putting down, and he makes a rude comment from the back row, you know, the scoffer, and it's funny. I mean, he's trying to make people laugh. And if he does a rude sound or makes a rude comment or whatever it happens to be, and if you just keep right on teaching and ignore it, you know, and in your mind you think, well, he's just trying to get my attention. I'm going to ignore it. And this is one of my strategies for dealing with students that need more attention or seeking it. I'll just pretend like it didn't happen. Well, realize you're in a public setting, and the scoffer scoffed, and the naive kid heard the scoff, looked at you, and realized stamp of approval, right? And the scoffer goes, I'm going to push harder next time because I had a couple people giggle, and if I said it louder next time, I'll have more people laugh. The naive kids know that's okay in this classroom. Your wise kids heard the scoff, and your wise kids go, he said, and she didn't even... She just kept writing. right? And all of a sudden you lose the respect of the wise students in your classroom. What could be worse? You know, your best kids in the classroom don't even respect you anymore. So if you rewind the tape, and again, it's all sorts of different things. You know, sometimes it's just funny. I've had funny little first day of school with a couple homeschool kids. And it was just this awkward transition, only took a day or two, where they were used to me and mom as peers. And then they get into my classroom and they're thinking me and Mr. Whitling as peers. And that didn't work. Right? I mean, it was just this, you are not at home anymore, friend. And I'm not your mother. Sort of an awakening. I think it was really healthy for them. Little boys usually, right? But the thing that happens is somebody says some comment. It's either rude to another student or it might even be rude to the teacher or whatever it happens to be. And if you just stop and you say, will you please stand up and repeat that? And you just look at them. And it's funny how time, you know, for me, I'm not quick like this, right? It takes me time. One of the blessings is, you know, if I'm in the middle of an office visit and I just sit and look at a student, and the student's going, and he thinks, he's just seeing right through me right now. And all I'm thinking is, what do I do now? You know, it's the truth. I'm thinking, Lord, this is really hard. You know, no witnesses. He says no. She said yes. And I'm, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, I need to take a walk and pray. And I'm just looking at him. And time is really on your side in discipline situations because it brings this apprehension. You know, even I'm teaching PE. Someone has an office visit while I'm teaching class. I just want the teachers to send them to the office and have them sit. 10 minutes, 20 minutes can be really sanctifying for somebody's soul. I mean, they're just waiting. You know, it's your imagination. But it's this sort of thing, just, you know, where if something happens, and again, those aren't magic words, stand and please repeat it. Sometimes I wouldn't want them to repeat it. You know, it's inappropriate. There are times when I would just look at them and say, you know what? That's inappropriate. We don't say that in my class. Do you need to know why? Right? And if we do, well, it's because that was disrespectful to your teacher. One of your jobs in life is to respect your parents. And as your teacher, your parents have delegated authority to me. God hates it when you're rude to your parents. God hates it when you're rude to your teacher. I just want our classroom to be fun. It's no fun when people are being rude to each other. Does that make sense? Okay. And so it's, again, there's not a magic formulation. But if you see sin, if you see a scoffer scoff, your job is to tell him, not good, not well done. Right? And it should be spoken in such a way that's consistent, like what Doug said this morning. Your content should be singing the same tune as the way it's delivered. And I don't mean angry or red in the face or throwing chalk or anything, you know, out of control, anything like that, but just, I hate it when people disobey God in my classroom. And it's my responsibility to make sure that God's pleased with us. This is a big deal. We're not going to do that anymore. Okay, so some sort of response. What that does is your scoffer, if it was effective, your scoffer goes, I'm not doing that again. Whatever I do, I'm not doing that again. Right? Your naive kids all go, not going there, not going there. Right? Because they're pretty malleable in life. They're just like, okay, and people are going, that means this and that and the other thing are not acceptable on a field trip or during an assembly, or there's a million little connections that just go, right? And all you did was address one thing the first day of school, and your naive students are becoming wise, and by God's grace, your scoffers are becoming more mature and more wise. And your wise students go, yes. Right? And your wise students are with you. Right? We care. This is going to be a good class. This is the sort of place I want to be. I want to work hard here. But I would encourage you not to ignore it. Deal with those sorts of things. Maybe I'll add another. It's like a subset of that last one. And the way that you could say it is public offenses should have public consequences. Okay? So, I mean, that's going back to this Proverbs 21:11. And it's, you know, if everybody hears it, everybody needs to at some level understand whether that was good or not. Okay, whether you're saying well done or poorly done. And, you know, it doesn't mean that if someone needs a spanking, we don't spank them in front of the classroom. You know, nothing like that. But to the extent that everybody heard what took place, they should know, even if it's just a trip to the office, they should know that little world is falling apart now, and I wouldn't want to go in that particular direction, because it's a blessing to the rest of the class. They're learning by experience, and it doesn't have to be them every time, learning every single lesson on their own. Okay, so let's talk about disobedience, which is the first sin we're going to tackle. And there are basically two types of disobedience that you're going to run into as a parent or as a teacher. And the first is, you know, what I would call immediate disobedience, or, you know, some people would call it rebellion, which is you ask a child to sit down and he says no. Right? And it's right in your face and you can see it. It's not hard to spot. You're there in the moment right now. So that's immediate disobedience. The other, we could call it subsequent disobedience, you know. So it's usually a nickel dime offense, some low level offense, like you're not supposed to chew gum at school, or you're not supposed to run in the hallway, or, you know, whatever the little rules are. And somebody 3 weeks after, you know, school starts, they're doing it. And so it's subsequent. It's not straight up the middle. And I wouldn't call it rebellion. It's not immediate. It's not straight up rebellion to a command, but it is disobedience. You know, if you've done your job as a teacher and you've presented your expectations and they're not living up to them, this is the family that it would fall in. So for immediate disobedience, if somebody says no, you should have a school policy that dictates what you do next. Okay, for us at Logos, my teachers know if they're dealing with a student that's just will not comply, then the teacher turns into a transportation officer, right? And you're like a taxi driver. You just get the student from point A to point B, which is to my office. And then I deal with the situation then. The teacher, you know, if a student says no, they don't try to talk him into it. Please, it would be good for your well-being if you got off the fence. You know, anything like that. They're just saying, we need to get you to Mr. Whitling's office as soon as possible. And if they can't, you know, and again, this doesn't happen at Logos, but I'm used to this scenario from public schools. If you can't get the student to the office, then you get the office to the student, right? It's one or the other. And so if you're somewhere and somebody is pitching a fit and they're out of control and they won't obey what you ask them to do, you take a good student, you know, you take a wise student, you say, you go get Mr. Whitling now, right? And you stay with your class. They'll bring the administrator to you. He'll haul the student off and take care of it. And again, that's not common. That's very, very rare in classical Christian schools. But you need to know what you would do, you know, if you got into that situation of rebellion. The more common thing is the subsequent disobedience. And so I'll go through, you know, the categories I think through again are you need to teach your standards. Okay, so when it comes to obedience in your classroom, you need to teach your students what are your expectations. And, you know, you could call this, the doctrinal term is just, you know, terms of the covenant. It's the terms of the relationship, right? How does it work between the teacher and the student in this scenario? And so what do you teach? Well, Ephesians 6, 1 and 2, and we should have that straight in our own minds. It says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise." Okay? And you'll have some students that will come to you knowing that, and they've lived it all of their life because their parents have required that of them. They've taught them that. You'll have other students where it's been kind of halfway in, halfway out, which means you obey your parents when you can tell that they're almost at the end of their rope, right? Or it's a decibel level thing, right? If mom says it in a calm, cheery voice, everything's good. Keep playing the video game. When mom starts to ratchet up the volume of what she's saying and gets a little shorter and quicker with it, then you should start moseying on, you know, now's the time. With me growing up, it was, you know, my parents, they came to the Lord later in their lives, and so they were experimenting, trying to figure out how to do this thing. But they would count, right? So if they give you a command and you didn't obey, they'd say, "Matthew, that's one." Well, I'm pretty good. I mean, one, I know what one means. That's a warning. Right? And I'm one of those kids that's kind of like, anybody in there? You know, I was tough. No fun to raise. And so one, I'm just like, okay. Two is, you're almost a three is what two means. That's like more of a warning. Right? And then nothing would happen until three. Well, I'm like a 2.5, 2.75, more often is more like a three kid. Right? Growing up, I made it to three. And that's how, and my mom had to do business over and over and over again, and it seemed like it wasn't getting through. Right? Ineffective. And the Lord's blessed me with one or two high maintenance kids like that too. Right? So I know what that's like. And I know what it's like to leave for work in the morning and have my wife, you know, as I'm walking out, my wife's walking my son to the red room. We called it the red room. It had red carpet in it. That's where we would do business. She's walking him to the red room as I'm going to work, and I get back, and they're still in the red room. And it's not just a coincidence that happened. You know, she's like, it seemed like all day long, right? And you get this feeling of it's not working, you know. And you think, what else? Okay, we need a different program, because we've been doing this for 2 weeks, and it's not going away, right? Well, you're a farmer, right? Farmers go 2 weeks, and you want fruit. Right, and you're a slower farmer than what we have nowadays. You know, season for them, they want to see fruit after a number of months. It's longer than that. Sometimes it takes years for you guys, and for the tough kids, it takes years. And the progress you make, you don't see it. Right, because you go 2 or 3 years, the issues you were working on a couple of years ago, you're not working on those. You've got new issues that you're working on now, and they're even harder now. Right? But all you see is the thing that's right in front of you. And so you need to remind each other, husband and wife, that we are making progress. Remember back when we were chipping away at these sorts of things. He's not biting people anymore. Now we've moved on, right, to something else. And the harvest comes later on. It's afterward. So anyway, teaching Ephesians 6, 1 and 2, how do you train? You know, when it comes to the classroom situation, we have one classroom rule. And I'll say, hey, there's just one rule this year in third grade or in sixth grade. And the rule is obey right away, all the way, and with a good attitude every day. And that's it. Everything's good. And if you say that to your students and you think, now I told them. Everything's good. Whitling said, everything's good now. And you can even ask them, does everybody understand? And all of your students are going to go, And in your head, you know, and I'll talk to you about this, you need to translate for them sometimes. In your head, just say, "We have no clue what you're talking about." Any part of it. Right? You say right away, you've got to explain to them, and this is part of training, which we'll get into, but you say, by right away, what I mean is immediate obedience. In fact, if I ask you, you know, if you're up sharpening your pencil, you can talk to your students, you're up sharpening your pencil, and I say, "John, please sit down." And John says, "Yes, sir," and he walks over by his friend Bill and goes, phew, right? And then comes over to his desk, which is actually over here. I'd say every step you took between the pencil sharpener and his desk was a disobedient step. Because when I ask you to sit down, I mean now. And it should be straight to your chair. Otherwise, it's not obedience. It's, "I'll obey once I get around to it." Okay? And your students need to have you unpack that for them with little hypothetical situations. You know, if this happened, would it be obedience or disobedience? And third graders can figure that out. And in real life, you know, if you have a scenario take place, you can say, "Did anybody just see that?" You know, blurting. Right? Do you guys know what blurting is? It's you have to raise your hand, be called on, stand, and speak. Okay, for us in third grade. My biggest issue the first week of class was teaching the kids to actually do that. Right? I mean, they're into it. They just want to say what's on their mind. And so you can have somebody blurt and just say, "All right, did anybody see what just happened?" You know, and all of a sudden you realize you've got a dozen kids who knew he blurted, knew he was breaking the rules, and they're just watching. Right, and again, you go back to wise kids, naive kids, and scoffers. And somebody who's blurting doesn't mean that they're a hardened criminal or just an awful scoffer. You know, and you think, day three, it doesn't look good for your son. And he's 8 years old, right? And he's brand new in this school, and the rules are really different than what he was used to in the past. And so you've got to teach them, you know, teach them your expectations, terms of the covenant, and then you've got to train them. You've got to practice obedience. And so what do? You know, first 2 weeks of school for the lower elementary, it's just boot camp, right? In a fun sort of way, which means as a principal, I really don't care that much how much academic progress my second graders make the first 2 weeks of class. It doesn't matter that much to me. Now, there need to be lesson plans. You know, pretend like you're going to do all the things you're supposed to do. But part of your lesson plans should be practice lining up, practice taking our Bibles out and finding the correct page. How do you sharpen pencils? How do you go to the bathroom if you need to? You know, just this, there's so many different things. I know, as an administrator, that if my teachers spend the first 2 weeks teaching and training and practicing in a way that's actually fun and enjoyable, you know, practice lining up. We practice lining up. Why? Because I know that if that's done thoroughly and well, we're going to overtake any sort of academic progress hand over hand, you know, throughout the rest of the year, because it's going to be little pieces of time. Right? Little wasted transitions between subjects. Have you ever waited between, you know, something like, "We just finished math and now we're going to reading." How hard can it possibly be to put your math book away in your desk and pull the correct next book out? Well, for three quarters of your class, it's for me, the whittling kid in your class. He's like, "Are we putting things away already?" You know, and then you put it away and pull out the wrong thing, and then it slides off the front of your desk. You know, you go underneath your desk and you pull it out and you come back up and you open it up and your pencil's broken. You know, and everybody else is like, and the teacher's going, you know, and one of One of the laws of teaching is you don't begin until you have the full attention of your students. So teacher's thinking, I'm waiting, you know, and it's not all necessarily disobedience, you know, hardened rebellion going on. It could be just a healthy dose of cluelessness and immaturity that's there. And it will waste hours, days of your life. If you let it accumulate, imagine the transitions. You know, how many subjects do you teach a day? 6, 7, or 8? How many transitions are between each thing? And count between recess, you know, going out to recess, coming back in from recess, going to PE, getting your shoes on, taking your shoes off. You know, all of the different things. It's days of time. It really is days of time that you will waste if you don't train your students how to do the simple things of life in the classroom. And once the class is a finely tuned, well-oiled machine, you'll just fly. You can run at that point. Otherwise, it's no fun for anybody. You're just wasting time. So what, you know, the sorts of things that we practice. We'll practice lining up for recess, right? It might seem really silly, but, you know, and we don't do this in the upper elementary, 5th and 6th grade. We don't spend a lot of time on it. Preschool through 4th grade, we'll practice. And what I mean is we'll go up, you know, when I was teaching 3rd grade, we'd go up to the recess ground. I'd say, okay, it's not recess time right now, but every day at 10 o'clock from 10 to 10:15, you guys are going to have recess. We'll come up here and you can play. And what's going to happen is 3 minutes before 10:15, right, 10:12, the recess duty is going to ring a bell or blow a whistle. And when she does that, your job is to sprint straight silent. Okay, that's what we're looking for. And that's one of our assembly sayings. You know, I'll say lines. Anytime I say lines, the kids will say, sprint, straight, silent, clap, clap, clap. Okay, 3 things. Why? Because I know that my job is to teach them my expectations. And again, you can have them memorize it, and you quiz each one, sprint, straight, silent, clap, clap, clap. They know it. But you ask yourself, do they know it? And you could ask them, does everybody understand? Are you ready to do that? At 10:12 today, they'll all go. And in your head, just go. Not one of them. Right? They don't understand it yet. So you have to go up and practice. You say, okay, this is recess. When I say go, I want you to run. Just run and yell. Right? Like it's recess time. When I blow the whistle, show me sprint, straight, silent. Ready? Go. And you have them run, okay? And so they just go bonkers. They think, this is really fun, right? It's 8:45, and we're practicing recess right now. So it's not as though, you know, and it's not as though you're the, you know, the Hitler of the classroom sort of thing. You're just playing games with them, right? You're teaching them the expectations. You're practicing. You're training. And while you train, you're seeing whether they really understand what you want or not. And then, you know, they're running berserko. You blow the whistle, and then you watch. And the majority of the kids, they'll hustle into line. They'll be in a pretty straight line, and they won't be talking too much. There'll be a few kids that jog over, and they're playing and talking to their friend, and the line's not very straight. And now this is really crucial for them to learn what sort of person you are. Is you've just presented the standard and you trained them, and now there's accountability that's provided, and then just stop, right? If you go, that was pretty good, let's go down, we've got to do our math lesson, and you're thinking, man, the time is flying on this first day. No, don't even care about the time. Just stop. And what I do is I'll look at the line, and then I'll kind of lean down, and I'll go. And I'll say, I want to see one face at the front of this line. That's the face of the kid who's in the front. And everybody else knows in the back of the head of the person in front of you. Let's tuck it in. And all of a sudden, they're kind of going. And I'll look at it and I'll say, that's better. But you know what? This was terrible. And then just stop. Right? And I'll say, here's why. When I blew the whistle, I saw some kids jogging and kind of being goofy on their way to line. They didn't obey right away. Sprint means get to line as quickly as you can. Straight means I want a perfectly straight line with no ears sticking out. And they'll kind of go. I mean, one face. That's what a straight line means. And then silent? You two in the back of the line were talking when you lined up. Did you notice that? I'll say, we're going to do it again. And you might do it one more time or two more times. And again, you're thinking, one or two more times? I'd say, yes. Right? You've got to do it until when you blow the whistle, they're... And you go, that's it. Way to go. Right? And you say, when I blew the whistle, everybody sprinted. I mean, you were flying to line. That's what I want. Look at how straight this thing is. And when you say that, they tuck in. Right? Anytime you say it, you tell them, well done, nice job, they tuck in. If you say poorly done, they tuck in. They're thinking. And what they're learning is, you pay attention. Lots of kids have been in classes or in homes of adults who don't pay any attention. They're just firing off commands. Don't touch that. Stop doing this. You know, and they're distracted and they're busy and they don't think that anybody really cares that much because nobody does. Okay, there's not a lot of focused paying attention. The teacher's too busy for her own good and for the children's own good. Just pay attention. Do a couple things really well. And they'll think, he's watching, right? And he cares about the little things. I mean, we've got a one face. Nobody's ever said that before. How do I do this, you know? And they're trying to not mess it up. But you've got to make sure you get to the point where you say, well done, good and faithful servant, essentially is what you're doing, so that they see you can be pleased. Right? You can't just be dissatisfied, that was terrible, that was pathetic. I think it's okay to use those words wisely and with a little bit of a twinkle in your eye so they're like, he's joking. Right? You know, because I'm pretty stern and serious, but I want to have a lot of fun at the same time. Part of the reason I'm so stern is because I want to have a lot of fun. And I realize if we're not where we need to be, it's going to be a dud. The whole year is going to be a drag for me, for them, for the school, for their parents. But if this experience, if they're obedient and respectful and they're just right on the money, think of the things we could do. Think of how much freedom I would give them. Think of where I would want them to take them. And so anyway, train them. All sorts of little things. Here's the last story on that front for obedience. Is one of the transitions that was killing me my first year was it was the transition between Latin and reading. I didn't teach Latin, so I was actually out of the classroom. Julie Garfield was in there teaching the students. I would come in after Latin, and I would walk in, and it was time for us to start, and the kids would have their Latin books still out. And I would have to manage this four-minute transition of finishing up some of our assignments, getting them put in, getting the right book out, you know, all of the headache of that. And I just thought, you know what, I don't want to waste this time anymore. So I taught the kids what my expectations were, that when Latin's over, boom, we close our books, we stick the books in the desk before the teacher's out the door, and that before the next teacher comes in the door, ideally we've got our Charlotte's Web book out and we're at the correct page. Because when I walked in the classroom, I wanted to walk into a classroom of students with their books out on the right page. I thought, what could be better? You know, I mean, we're just there. So I taught them, and I trained them, and we worked for a number of days. And then it was time for me to test them and see whether they could do it without me managing every detail of the transition personally. And so I just thought, I'm going to give them a couple seconds with no teacher in the classroom. And so I left for Latin. Julie taught. I waited outside the door. Julie walked out the door, and I looked at her, and I just waved and smiled. The door closed, and it was just third graders in the class. And then I went up to the door and listened. And I could hear desks closing, clunk, 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 clunk. And I thought, okay, a couple more seconds, couple more seconds, couple more seconds. And then I opened the door just a little bit. and I looked in like this. And they knew what I was doing, right? Because we'd been working on it, and I had 17 students like this. They were all looking at me, right? And then I just stood there for a second, and I looked at him. Then you open the door a little bit more and come in. And if you come in and say, well, it's about time you guys finally manage that transition. Now let's get on to page 17. Okay, all of a sudden you've missed, you know, and this goes into blessing for obedience and cursing for disobedience, right? If you come in and they've done it on their own with no supervision, you've got to come in and realize, okay, I have an opportunity right now. And don't miss the chance to just come in and say, you guys, look at you. And then just pause. And they're kind of going. And I'll say, all 17 of my third graders, you've got your books out, Latin workbooks are put away, you're focused, you're silent. This is why I love coming to work every day, is to work with you guys. Right? And you might think, that's a little bit corny. That's third grade. Right? I mean, we live and breathe corny. They love school. They love their teacher. They'll do whatever you want them to do. I mean, they believe you. Right? You know, you say something, or you don't say something in class, and they think they heard you say it. They'll argue with their parents that night at the dinner table. Mr. Whitling said, and the parent comes back, and you think, I'm not sure I said that. I don't even believe that. Right? But you have all these disciples following hard after you. Some things you don't even realize. So it's lots of practice. Okay, and we talked about a verbal rebuke. You know, somebody pops off, somebody does something they shouldn't do, and addressing it. Okay, if it's a public situation, just for a moment, let's talk about teachers, because it's really easy for us to think that my students are the ones with the sin problem, and so I need to figure out how to manage the little sinners that I'm in charge of. tell me, what's the next sin? Well, let's not move on to the next sin, because the project really is this. As a parent, your kids are copying you. As a teacher, your students are copying you. They're becoming like their teacher. Right? I mean, that's why they talk to their parents about it at dinner that night, is they're disciples. They're following after you. And so for us, one of the best ways to discipline your children at home, you know, if you think, I just want godly sons. Well, the best thing to do is start with their dad, right? Because they're apples that are falling by your tree. You know, and a bunch of us are trying to go, how do I get these, you know, how do I get godly sons? You know, you're trying to get the apples as far away from the tree as you possibly can. Well, the way to get your children to be godly is you show them. Right? Move the stupid tree to where it's supposed to be. You're not going to be able to toss apples that far away from yourself. So same sort of thing. You know, if there are parents and they're going, just wish my kids would obey. Right? Or dad, I wish people would respect me more at this house that I live in, my wife and my children, you know, whatever the problem is. Well, where's the tree? You know, why are these people, why is it that everybody under your authority is so much like you, and why are you displeased by that? Okay, is that a surprise to us? So, you know, in teachers, you know, if you think, man, I love this right away, all the way, and with a good attitude every day, show them. You know, when you come to a staff meeting, are you thinking, this is my administrator, he's my boss. When he says, we're going this direction, right away, all the way, with a good attitude every day. Or are you a stinker? Right? Are you a scoffer? And I know what I know teachers can be the worst students sometimes. I learned this as I was doing my student teaching, my first staff meeting ever. I was just there as a visitor. And the administrator began the meeting with teachers talking to each other, and they just kept right on talking. And I remember thinking, they're not obeying him. You know, nobody's listening in this classroom of teachers, you know, who would want their own students to act completely differently than they were. And it was just this shock to me. So anyway, apply the standard to yourself first and think, okay, if my administrator says, here's the new grammar program, or we're going to do a different phonics program next year, are you inclined to think, I'm going to make this thing sing? Or are you thinking, face plant. I can make this thing crash and burn, and I'll give you all sorts of reasons why it's the worst program in the world to use. Well, curriculum is just a tool. Right, as a teacher, you pick it up and you can use it poorly or you can use it well. If your administrator says, hey, I want to test it for a year, let me know what you think at the end. Your job is to make it work. Make it successful. If your administrator says, ladies, I want you to dress modestly, take that and translate it into very specific things. Cleavage. Do not have a low blouse that when you bend over scandalizes your fifth grade boys. Right? Don't make your administrator say, it's your breasts that I'm concerned about. Right? How awkward is that? Just translate it. Think, okay. You know, think of your junior high school girls or high school girls that are pushing the envelope of the uniform policy. Why would they do that? Are there any staff members that are pushing the envelope of modesty? Sometimes. Right? Just translate it. Too tight. Right? If it looks like you've been poured into the blouse, it's too tight. You might say, I'm not married yet. That's what we're dealing with here, is you look like you're trying to catch someone here. So just think right away, all the way, with a good attitude every day. How can I embrace this and make it go? And then you find your own children following after you. Find your own students following after you. Okay, let's talk about dishonesty. In students, what we're primarily dealing with is cheating. Okay, and there have been all sorts of who's who studies over the years. Here's the summary. The percentages are a little bit different every year, but the story is this: most high school students, the best, when they're asked, "Did you cheat at some point during your high school career?" say, "Yes, I did." Most of them, about 80% of the who's who kids. When you ask their parents, did they cheat during high school? The majority of the parents say, no, not my children. Okay, and we're in an academic environment with high standards. We shouldn't be surprised that one of the common temptations for our students is wandering eyes during a math test. Okay, writing spelling words on the top of your desk in pencil before the spelling test. Whatever it happens to be, plagiarism in the secondary. Okay, and it's not a sign that the school is just awful and you need to change the school. It's a sign that we're a broken people and we have certain temptations that come with different environments we're in. You're in an academic setting, there are going to be academic sins that attend. Right, there are temptations that come with that sort of thing. And so what do you teach? Exodus 20:15 says, thou shalt not steal. Right? And your students need to know that cheating is stealing and lying. We need to know that. right? Don't just think, well, they're working together too much. That is not the project, okay? It's not creative research, or, I mean, you can't rename it. If it's a test situation, your eyes need to be on your own paper. If you look on somebody else's paper and take an answer and write it down, you've stolen their work. If you turn it in and it has your name at the top of it and it's really their work, you're lying to your teacher about it. Okay? And so talking to students about that, just realize you don't want to steal something that somebody else's. Right? You want to be faithful to God. Sometimes being faithful to God means getting an F to the glory of God. Right? Which means maybe you didn't study as much as you should have, or you studied the wrong material, or you were just clueless, or you weren't paying attention like you should have. You know, whatever the issue is, once you get into the test, your job is to please God in that situation, not get as many points as you possibly can. For an elementary-aged kid, sometimes those lines are not distinct. They're just trying to do good. They're trying to do well. They need to know faithfulness looks like put your name on it, guess as many answers as you possibly can, get as many right as you can. Do not look to the left or the right. Be faithful to God and just think, I'm going to learn from this. I'm going to please God by being honest and turning this thing in. I'm going to fail it to the glory of God. Right? And then move on to the next thing. Don't put yourself in that situation again. Training means talking to your students about this. We talk a lot about eyes in a wise spot, okay, in the elementary. Make sure your eyes are in a wise spot. For us, if we're taking a test, you're in a little math test, third grade or second grade, I'm taking my test. Some second or third grade kids that are competitive, they're going through, he's thinking, I'm on number six. I wonder if anybody else is on number six. I'm on number seven. I'm on number eight. You know, and their eyes are all over the place. Okay, at Logos, if your eyes are on another test, during the test situation, we're going to handle it as though it was cheating, which means zero on the test, office visit, you're done. You cannot tell as a teacher, parent, or administrator. You may think you know this student inside and out. You cannot tell when they look at somebody else's paper, whether they're going to use that answer or not, or how they're going to use it, or how many times they've looked. If God gives you that one slice of time where you see them look, you've got to be faithful with that. And you have to have a clear policy that your parents know about, because parents, if they don't know that this is how you handle it, they're going to say, but she didn't write it down. She didn't have time. I mean, you caught her right then. You should give her credit for what she's done up to this point. Or, you know, this really hurts. It's going to hurt her grade. It should. Right? So the rules need to be really clear. If your eyes are on somebody else's paper during a test, it's going to be handled as though it was cheating. If a student tells me, Mr. Whitling, I shouldn't have looked. I did look. I'm so sorry. I just want you to know I didn't take any answers. I would say, I believe you. It's a zero on the test. It's an office visit, right? At the very least, it's disobedience. If my teachers have done a good job teaching and training, they know the consequences of this sort of thing. Your eyes should be here, okay? They should be on your desk. It's okay to look up and think. That's fine. But eyes need to be in a wise spot all the time. We've talked about blessing and cursing, you know, for obedience and disobedience a little bit. Let's talk about in teachers. When your administrator asks you, you know, if you sit down at the end of the year, I sit down with my elementary teachers and my secondary teachers, and I'll look at them and say, did you complete your grade level objectives? If you look at your administrator and say, yes, and in your mind you're thinking, pretty much, or I probably should go back and check, or I covered a lot in those last 3 days because I looked and I knew I was going to be asked this question, and so I just skimmed over those things. I mean, you know what it's like. I could cover all of my grade level objectives in the first quarter, but not thoroughly, not adequately. When you're asked a question, you know, if I'm the principal and I say, okay, F day was last Friday, have you contacted all of the parents of students who are getting a 73% or lower? by this point? Have you made contact with those parents? And you go, yes. And in your head you're going, I will have done that by the end of today. You're a liar. Right? And it's really easy for us to have high standards for other people and cut ourselves a lot of slack. Right? And so if you're a liar, you've got to confess it. Handle it the way you'd want your students to handle it. You've got to make it right with God and with any man that's involved in it. Okay. Discontent. And, you know, I'm looking at the time, and I believe we're supposed to be done at 10:50. Is that correct? You guys know? I think what we're going to do, the nice thing about having another session this afternoon, is I'm going to push this sin into the afternoon, and we'll tackle discontent with the other ones. So thank you very much for coming. Have a good morning.